We have every confidence that Pebble can be developed safely and in a manner that protects and coexists with the important fishery resources.
Pebble announces a new financial partner to help carry its controversial mine forward. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 18th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, the state no longer offers a program that helps prisoners recover from addiction due to a contract dispute.
It was terrible timing for this event to happen. It was exactly the wrong time.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Education scholarships and grants for ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, are available. To learn where the possibilities this education can take you, visit beanengineeralaska.com. This community message on Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil. Energy lives here.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Pebble announced it as a new partner to carry a potential mining project through at least the permitting phase. First Quantum Minerals is a Canadian-based company that currently operates 7 mines in 6 countries, including a large copper project in Panama. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Pebble CEO Tom Collier says First Quantum will bring a lot of relevant experience to the table.
They just finished a project that's very similar to the Pebble project in Panama, and it's gotten very positive reviews from the industry in terms of the design of the project, its efficiency, the financial economics of it, and also the way in which they have related to the community that they have built the project in.
Anglo-American was the other half of Northern Dynasty's Pebble Limited partnership until Anglo abruptly pulled stakes in 2013. Prior to that, Anglo had helped fund exploration and the environmental baseline study, but its departure was nearly a death blow for the controversial mining prospect northwest of Iliamna. At the same time, President Obama's EPA was finishing preemptive Clean Water Act restrictions. Other opposition was building, and Pebble just about ran out of money without Anglo. Almost all exploration activities at the site stopped for several years. The situation has turned around in 2017, in large part due to a new EPA under President Trump. Pebble and EPA have settled a lawsuit allowing the company to start a normal permitting process. The company has raised new investments, unveiled a smaller mine design, and now named the new partner. First Quantum has agreed to buy in at $150 million paid out in regular installments over the next 4 years, which Collier says will be used to fund Pebble's permitting phase.
That's the most important step for us. And then at the end of that option period, they can exercise the option for an additional $1.35 billion. And if they pay that money, they will be a 50% owner of Pebble Partnership along with Northern Dynasty.
Philip Pascal is the chairman and CEO of First Quantum. He held a conference call primarily with investors Monday morning, some of whom were skeptical about First Quantum getting involved.
We have every confidence that Pebble can be developed safely and in a manner that protects and coexists with the important fishery resources.
Reaction from Pebble's opponents was swift Monday. A joint statement from Bristol Bay's Regional Native Association, Native Corporation, Economic Development Corporation, 15 tribal councils, and even House Speaker Bryce Edgman from Dillingham said that Bristol Bay remains united in its opposition and a new financial backer is not going to change that. They say the EPA and its watershed assessment has already proven the risk of large-scale mining to the world's largest sockeye salmon fishery is too great. Mark Niver, a Bristol Bay drift permit holder who lives in Wasilla, says the opposition grows stronger with each step in the process.
We've really shouldered together, everybody within the fishing industry in particular, to say, hey, this fishery is way too great to risk anything at all.
Of its goals for 2017, Pebble has now settled with EPA and named a new partner. It remains to be seen if they will start the permitting process in the next 2 weeks, but First Quantum's CEO said Monday that he expects that to happen in the next couple of days. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
A landslide early this morning on the Seward Highway blocked traffic between Anchorage and Point South for more than 5 hours. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove has more.
Rocks, mud, and trees slid down a mountainside and across both lanes of the highway about a mile from Indian, between Anchorage and Girdwood. Transportation officials say the debris hit a car, took out a guardrail, and reached the nearby railroad tracks. Department of Transportation spokesperson Shannon McCarthy visited the site of the slide and later spoke to the driver of the car that was struck, who said she was uninjured.
We saw some broken plastic parts. She said that the back window had been smashed out.
McCarthy says Alaska State Troopers first notified DOT of debris on the roadway a little before 6 a.m. Scattered rocks are common on that stretch of highway, so the lone heavy equipment operator sent to deal with the debris was not expecting to find such a large pile.
It's at the base of a mountain, and there's cliffs, and so oftentimes if a rock falls, which it does, it's very active, it'll fall right into the roadway.
The operator quickly realized he was dealing with something much larger than a few rocks and shut down the highway. McCarthy says the pile was about 4 feet deep and 75 feet wide. DOT geologist Craig Bachman climbed up the slope at first light to see if it was safe to send in crews. Once he gave them the thumbs up, the equipment operators had the highway cleared and reopened a little after 11.
This landslide feature was definitely unusual.
Bachman says he's only seen one other true landslide on the Seward Highway in the last 15 years. He says that was about 100 miles to the south and more the result of a small avalanche. As for today's landslide, Bachman says his guess is that water from two small drainages running down the slope froze and created a fragile dam.
Perhaps that kind of blocked it off, and then we got this warm-up and a lot of rain kind of built up behind, you know, possibly a frozen area that eventually thawed and it all just came down.
McCarthy, the DOT spokesperson, says motorists should keep an eye out for rocks or other debris on the highway, which will be difficult to see in the dark. And she says the DOT is still evaluating the nearby terrain for any further landslide problems. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's oldest son, Track, has been charged with assaulting his father at the family's home in Wasilla. An affidavit by a Wasilla police officer says Sarah Palin told police Saturday night that Track Palin was freaking out and on some type of medication. The affidavit says after the altercation, Todd Palin was bleeding from cuts on his head. He told police the dispute began when his son called wanting to get his truck. Track Palin was arraigned on charges, including misdemeanor assault, on Sunday. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, hunters on Prince of Wales Island say too many wolves are cutting into the deer population.
I don't think anybody here is interested in wiping them out. For the most part, they're okay with wolves. Just not so many.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of operations in Alaska. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Governor Bill Walker released the state budget on Friday. Tucked in there is a proposal to pay off nearly $900 million in tax credits owed to oil companies. Rasha McChesney from Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
Currently, the state is making minimum payments on those cashable oil and gas tax credits it owes. It's not scheduled to pay them off fully until 2025. So Walker and the Department of Revenue came up with a plan.
What we're proposing is to find a way to pay them all off in the very near term, using bonds.
That's Ken Alper. He's the director of the tax division. The details of the proposal are not fully fleshed out, but essentially, the state would offer oil and gas companies the opportunity to get reimbursed for credits by 2019 at a discount. That discounted rate could be somewhere between 90 to 94 cents for every dollar owed.
We don't want to lose money on the deal, and that's where the discount rate comes in. It's going to cost us money to issue these bonds and borrow this money. We want the amount of discount we get from industry to at least pay the state's cost and risk associated with that borrowing money.
Before the deal can move forward, the legislature has to vote to allow the state to negotiate the deals and sell the bonds. And a deal might be attractive to companies, not just because they get their money sooner. Right now, their options are to wait for the state to pay these cash credits off or sell them to one of the major producers in the state. But it's a buyer's market.
The problem is the major producers don't have that much demand because the price of oil is lower. They don't have as much tax obligation as they used to. To the extent they are willing to purchase them, they're going to pay a pretty steep discount.
Alper says the most important goal is to free the state of that $900 million debt and increase industry's confidence that the state will pay what it owes. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
Alaska's Permanent Fund Corporation has about $5 billion invested in fossil fuels. That includes stocks in companies like Halliburton, Exxon, BP, and Tesoro. A coalition of groups, including the Alaska Climate Action Network and Oasis Earth, wants that to change. Last week, they petitioned the Permanent Fund's board to drop all its fossil fuel holdings. Rick Steiner of Oasis Earth has been pressuring the corporation and the state for 25 years to drop those investments. And for the first time, the corporation's board of trustees has requested a meeting to talk about the sustainability and ethical impacts of its investments. Steiner says he hopes it's the first step toward a screening process for investments that could cause social or environmental harm.
I was elated. I mean, in a way, it took me a minute to really process that.
Steiner has also requested that the Permanent Fund Corporation provide a history of the performance of its fossil fuel holdings. He says that data will likely show that they are not profitable anymore.
Socially responsible investing has proven itself to be more lucrative, to be more popular, and some of these other negative investments, such as fossil fuels, nuclear weapons, and corrupt company activities throughout the world, which the Alaska Fund is still invested in. They're a drain on a total portfolio. They're not an asset.
No one at the Permanent Fund or its board was available to talk about the petition, but the corporation did send a written statement saying that it was too soon to know the framework for its socially responsible investment session. A state contract to provide drug and alcohol treatment to inmates ended at a bad time last year. It delayed services for some that could help prepare them to re-enter the community. At the same time, a controversial state law reduced criminal sentences. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what the state is doing to address the issue.
Drug and alcohol treatment is expected to play an important part in supporting the changes being made to Alaska's criminal justice system. They began after Governor Bill Walker signed Senate Bill 91 in July of last year. The idea is that inmates are less likely to commit crimes in the future if their addictions are treated. But a key state contract to provide treatment with the nonprofit organization Aquila ended on December 31, 2016. The next day, the state increased the use of parole and community supervision outside of jail for offenders.
It was terrible timing for this event to happen. It was exactly the wrong time.
That's Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz, the chairwoman of the House Health and Social Services Committee. She noted that roughly 4 out of 5 inmates have a substance use disorder. Aquila provided treatment in prisons across the state. When the contract ended, state officials say they focused their efforts on 55 prisoners who were in the middle of treatment, using temporary employees to fill the gap. Others had to wait. The state is supposed to be able to treat 240 prisoners at a time with inpatient or intensive outpatient drug treatment. While one new contract was in place on January 1st, 2 others didn't start until December 8th, and other contractors are still looking for workers to operate the programs. Christopher Constant directs grants and contracts for Aquila. He says Aquila decided to end the contract because the state didn't build in any vacation or sick leave for its workers.
We ended up literally underwriting the state's treatment services more than $500,000 in a year from our own revenues, from other programs, right? And so we were stealing from other programs to pay for the state's treatment services.
Constant says Aquila gave the state 6 months' notice that it needed to build more time off for workers into the contract. State officials have a different view of the contract negotiation. Laura Brooks directs Health and Rehabilitation Services for the Department of Corrections. She noted that Aquila had agreed to a similar contract that covered services last year. Aquila gave 1 month's notice that it wouldn't renew its contract for 2017.
I don't think there would ever be a good time for us to lose a substance abuse contract. 80% of our population have substance use issues, and so this is a critical need for our population. So absolutely any time that we are left either without services or face a reduction in services, it's going to affect their transition back to the community.
State officials say the small number of drug treatment providers limited where the state offers treatment. With the loss of Aquila, the state closed the residential treatment program at Spring Creek Correctional Center in Seward. Some of those inmates moved to a similar program at Wildwood Correctional Complex in Kenai. The state replaced Aquila with three smaller contracts, with the Salvation Army's Clitheroe Center, Cook Inlet Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and Norton Sound Behavioral Health.
I'm confident that the contracts that we have now in place are going to be able to provide our offender population with the substance abuse programs and services that they need.
SB 91 is providing an additional $1 million per year for substance use treatment. State officials are still determining how they will use that money to expand drug and alcohol treatment. One step the state has taken is increasing the use of the medication Vivitrol to treat inmates addicted to opioids. Christopher Constant with Aquila says the state isn't doing enough to increase the individual and group counseling that are at the heart of drug treatment. He believes the state will have to increase this treatment if the sentencing changes are going to work.
There wasn't an incremental increase proposed anywhere. So just to me, it's a failed promise, and what the state really needs to do is fulfill the promise, and that's provide community-based support for all of these people they continue to push back out of the institutions that they've created.
Representative Sponholz says that other lawmakers focus too much on the cost savings from SB 91. She says that perhaps the state should have added more substance abuse treatment before implementing the law.
Perhaps those pieces were done out of order, that really we should have sunk a few million dollars on the front end into addiction treatment and then rolled out the sentencing reforms. And instead, we did it the opposite way and are experiencing some backlash as a result.
The state is keeping a close eye on the effectiveness of the expanded use of Vivitrol in treatment. The University of Alaska Anchorage is conducting a study of the medication in corrections. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
This deer season has been the worst in recent memory for a lot of hunters on Prince of Wales Island. In the past, large-scale industrial logging damaged important winter habitat, and some locals believe there's another reason there's so few deer on the island, too many wolves. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of how changes to the forest caused tensions over the wolf population to flare up.
Go anywhere in Craig, and you're likely to hear bits of conversation about the deer season. That includes the local diner, the kind of place that displays its homemade pies behind glass. Mike Duville has just returned from a long day of hunting.
What can I get for you?
Me, I'll just have a coffee, I think. Would
sure.
Be great.
Today, he bagged one deer, but he says it's taken him longer to fill his freezer this year. He remembers more plentiful seasons. And that's not the only change he's seen on the island during his lifetime. Duville says nearly all the big trees were standing when he was young. The first logging camps were just getting started.
And the island was pristine. There was no log clear cuts on it. So I've watched it turn from that into what it is today.
Large swaths of trees have been logged here since the 1960s. It's left poor habitat for deer and other animals. Without a canopy of old growth, snow can easily fall to the ground, obscuring important feeding spots. Duville serves on the Regional Advisory Council that makes recommendations to the Federal Subsistence Board and the state. And he says finding fewer deer on the island is affecting people's livelihood.
This is rural Alaska. It's bush Alaska. We don't like to buy meat. Not only that, it's $8-9 a pound.
Still, he says logging is just one factor. The other is a rapidly growing wolf population. The wolves are devouring the deer.
If you're going to harvest deer, you have to harvest wolves.
But not everyone agrees killing wolves is a good idea. In 2011, conservation groups petitioned the feds to protect the Alexander Archipelago wolf under the Endangered Species Act. At the time, it was estimated there were about 89 wolves living in the unit, less than half of what there was 20 years ago. But the wolves didn't wind up receiving additional federal protections. Instead, there have been joint efforts with the state to stabilize the population. And the number of wolves has been increasing. But it's not easy getting a handle on how many wolves there are. Mike Kampnich is driving his pickup truck to the top of a snowy ridge. He makes this rough ride to collect hair samples from the Alexander Archipelago wolf. Kampnich used to be a logger when he arrived on the island more than 30 years ago. But now, he works for the Nature Conservancy.
You know, some of the guys that I worked with in the past, you know, they're kind of like, you work for who?
We stop at one of the hair board sites, essentially a piece of plywood nailed to the ground and rigged with barbed wire. A stinky goo is placed on top. The wolves like to rub up against it, so it's the perfect comb for capturing their fur. Kampnich is careful to cover his tracks as we walk over to it.
Now you gotta kind of look really closely and see if there's any hair.
He puts on his glasses to get a better look, but there are no strands tangled in the barbed wire. This is just one of 21 locations he'll check on the island over the course of 2 days. When he does hit the jackpot, the hair is sent off to a lab to be analyzed by the state. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game uses the animal's DNA to calculate the wolf population, and a percentage of that becomes the wolf quota, the number of wolves that can be trapped or hunted each year. Kampnich says it can be a touchy subject locally. On a couple of occasions, he's seen hair boards vandalized and trail cams disappear.
It's really frustrating, but, you know, some people just will mess with your stuff. And
is that just to get the cameras, or is it a reaction with what you're doing out here?
It's probably a little of both.
But wolf hunters have helped Kampnich, too. They've shown him good spots to place the hair boards.
I've helped him quite a bit. I've lived here. I've trapped wolves.
Mike Duville, from before, wants there to be accurate wolf population estimates. And although he's helped Kampnich in the past, he thinks just using the hair boards misses the mark. The wolf population, he says, is bigger than the science alone suggests. So the wolf quota should reflect that.
I don't think anybody here is interested in wiping them out. I mean, you've always got one or two that might think that way, you know, but for the most part, they're okay with wolves. Just not so many.
Duville would like to see more traditional knowledge factored into how the state gauges the number of wolves. But he says getting the wolf population figured out isn't the only step to securing a future for the island's deer. He thinks big timber sales on Prince of Wales should become a thing of the past, even if that means the last remaining sawmill dries up.
I'm not willing to sacrifice this island to keep it running. I mean, there's a limit on how much you will donate to the cause, and I think that we're there.
Duville says he wants to live on the island from his childhood. It includes a healthy forest for humans, deer, and wolves. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Craig.
Students from around Alaska gathered in Anchorage this weekend to compete in the state wrestling tournament. Several of those students, young men and women, are from Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka, which in recent years has built the largest girls' wrestling program in the state. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
There you go. Taking it to the rim. There you go, man. There you go. Now pull him.
Mount Edgecombe students Agatha Andrews and Sydney Kimber met freshman year, but it took until sophomore year for them to warm up to each other.
Well, just when I was a freshman, I was really shy, and I didn't talk to a lot of people. And then, Agatha's made me open up as a person and be a little bit more noisy.
Now seniors, the close friends have a lot in common. Both are All-American wrestlers and state champions. Kimber, a national champion, Andrews, a finalist. They'll be competing in the state wrestling competition this weekend in Anchorage. Both could set records for high school women's wrestling in the state of Alaska in their weight class. And yet, until this year, they haven't had anything to show for it because women's wrestling is considered an emerging sport.
The first year they didn't keep score at all, and the second year they kept an unofficial score. And then last year they did the same thing, and we were the tournament winners, but it wasn't. They claimed that there wasn't enough girls, so we didn't get a trophy. But this year we met their requirement, and so we get a state trophy if we win.
Kimber says a lot of athletic programs in the state don't prioritize women's wrestling.
And a lot of people don't believe in girls wrestling still. I mean, there's teams that have one or two girls all over the state, but nobody has a team quite as big as us. Like our coach, he really promotes girls wrestling, and we have probably one of the biggest high school teams in the country.
That would be Kimber's dad, head coach Mike Kimber, tall with a bit of a 5 o'clock shadow and a wide grin.
Sydney is everything that I thought I was and wanted to be. I did wrestle for a couple years in college, and I just didn't have that in me. But Sydney has dedicated her time in the process of going to camps and training year-round, so she's ready to go.
Coach Kimber says wrestling is important for both genders, but with women, there's a radical shift in perspective about what they can and cannot do.
It's the first time in their lives a lot of the girls in our program have been told it's okay to roughhouse, it's okay to be physical, it's okay to be competitive, it's okay to want to win. It's the first time that they've been empowered to be in control.
Control of their futures, too. Andrews and Kimber are both seniors, thinking about what's next. They plan to wrestle at the collegiate level and eventually give back to their home communities. Andrews comes from Akyak and has an interest in studying business or nursing. And Kimber plans to go into physical therapy.
I don't want to be a doctor, like a surgeon. I'm like, not needles and, you know, knives and stuff. That's not my stuff. But I don't know, the physical therapy and give back to the sports community.
But before they can do that, a little recognition for their accomplishments wouldn't hurt.
I know it's gonna feel really amazing because we've been waiting for it and we just now wanna grab it and show it off. Yeah.
We don't get acknowledged a lot for being girls wrestlers, and you know, we've won state 3 times in a row and we don't get any recognition for that. So having a trophy will prove that we deserve it.
And even if it turns out that there isn't a trophy, Coach Kimber has another solution. He'll make a trophy and award it to the students himself. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had a report tonight from Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Casey Grove in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Elizabeth Jenkins in Craig, and Catherine Rose in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great evening.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.